The Wisconsin State Journal says charter schools are public schools. I said exactly what you're thinking. There are still newspapers? Hey, don't go and try and steal your great-grandma's newspaper. We've got you covered right here. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From CBSNews.com, principal refuses to allow first black valedictorian to give speech, so Rochester mayor intervenes. When Jason Lovett graduated last month as his high school's first black valedictorian, he prepared a speech, but he says his principal wouldn't let him give it.
Well, that's not a very nice principal.
No! Bad principal.
Bad principal. But the mayor stepped in.
He did.
Rochester. It's actually she.
Oh, she.
Yeah. But I mean, nice to do that, but Jason was never allowed to give the speech.
But here's me again my happy, shiny box of flowers and
people
rainbows.
Are finally getting used to that.
Yeah, good. That's okay. It'll rub off on people. Why?
Why?
Where is the... Why would someone do this just to be mean to someone? To be mean to this kid?
It sounds like it to be mean, right?
Right.
Yeah, and maybe? We don't know. And in fact, if you read through the entire story, this story is more about the Rochester mayor being awesome.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm like, well, you come through this story, and it's like, well, this is a pretty awesome mayor. I mean, she had him come speak at town hall, do all the stuff. But the answer to the question of why wasn't he allowed to give the speech? Well, you have to do a little bit of digging. And I did that.
It's not in the story.
It's not in the story. So I did a little bit. And in fact, if you go to the Hechinger Report and go to Andre Perry, you will find an article called When Students Are Better Role Models Than School Leaders, where he actually talks about Jason and the principal. And in fact, what happened here is that over the time that Jason was at school, he was a student who spoke his mind.
Right.
Put things out there and, in fact, organized protests when sometimes things in the school weren't up to par. Okay. There's a sense there then, oh, so that's why Jason was not allowed to give the valedictorian speech, because principal
didn't
maybe it wasn't that
he
wanted
to
be mean or just nasty, but it was like, yo, dude, you've been speaking all the time. You're done. I'm back in charge.
Yep.
Okay. Crap, though. Nonsense. In fact, Andre Perry's article is even better, because he's like, this is the thing we want to encourage in students, the idea to speak out when things are wrong. Mm-hmm. And so to take this opportunity away, and also from the first African-American graduate of this school who is the valedictorian, this is like a double slap in the face right here. And so, no, we can't be doing this now. Why did it happen? I don't know. We should say, though, at what school this was. This was in Rochester, and the school specifically was University Preparatory Charter School for Young Men. Does it matter that it was a charter school? Maybe, maybe not.
From the Wisconsin State Journal, an editorial. Don't confuse charter schools with voucher schools. Every charter school in Wisconsin is a public school. The many Democrats running for governor should memorize this fact, because some of them are getting it wrong.
Wow.
Bold statement.
How dare those politicians get something wrong? They've never been known to do that before.
Never. Never.
Okay. So according to the journal, the Wisconsin State Journal, all charter schools are public schools, period. End of story.
It says so right there.
It says so right there in the black and white.
Every charter school in Wisconsin
is a public school. Now, they make this statement. We first have to understand why they're making this statement, because they're using the definition of public school as publicly funded.
Okay, so that's their definition.
Yeah, okay. So public funds are used to create charter schools. Therefore, they're public.
Okay.
Point blank. Not really. That's not essentially the end of the definition, okay, public money. There's actually more included there that the journal leaves out. The question that I wanted to ask the journal, which I, of course, will do later when I do my rant and someone has to say it, is why are you not telling the truth here? Why does it take a Sunday editorial in your face. Why the need to make charter schools public schools? When you talk to anybody, there are distinct differences.
Okay, you had to go over this with me. What are the differences?
Okay, publicly funded. We get that. But here's the answer. If you're checking off and want a quick guide to public school versus not a public school.
Okay.
Publicly funded works.
Correct.
Okay, check one.
Yep.
Check two, locally elected school board. Check.
So that's a public school.
Okay, charter schools, locally elected school board, no check. So they're right there. So a traditional public school, when we talk about them, when people refer to public schools, they see a locally elected school board that are accountable. Those people are accountable to the taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's when we run into a big issue here is accountability. Now, some people say, well, you mean test scores? I'm saying, no, because if there's not a locally elected school board, who's in charge of the charter school? Now, the editorial here will say, look, oversight isn't a problem either because they have rules they have to follow, and they're the same rules of public schools have to follow. Okay, guess what? We have the same rules supposedly for voucher schools. Do they follow them? Most of the time, no. Across the country, we find this out. So just because one writes a rule does not mean one follows the rule.
From educationvotes.nea.org, 5 reasons charter schools are bad news for students. 44 states and the District of Columbia have charter school laws on the books. But here are 5 reasons why these taxpayer-funded, independently managed schools are bad for kids.
Well, right there, if we go back to the story before this on the Journal Sentinel in Wisconsin, there's a key, independently managed.
Right.
Okay? Not locally elected school boards. Now, that's not one of the 5, so let's just read the 5. Number 1, charters drain money away from traditional public schools. Number 2, for-profit charters are legal in more than half of the charter states. And in fact, in Wisconsin, we have some of the loosest regulations around for-profit charter schools. Number 3, no transparency, no accountability. No problem. Hey, we can do what we want. We're a charter school. About a third of charters that opened in 2000 were closed by 2010. Where did the kids go? And number 5, shocking report, $216 million in charter fraud, waste, and abuse. Okay.
Seems pretty transparent here, doesn't it?
Okay. Now, for the journal, then, they might want to look at some of this. So we'll refer back to that story and keep beating up on the journal, because the journal's simple definition of public schools are publicly funded. Here we get, yes, they are publicly funded, but guess what happens? There are at least 5 things. And so let's, number 1, draining money. People say, Tim, how does that happen? And Bonnie says, Tim, how does that happen?
How does it happen?
Well, it's simple. It works actually the exact same way as a voucher does, in that if a student leaves a local public school and goes to an independent charter school, the money for that student, the taxpayer money, follows that student out of the local community school into the charter school, leaving the school originally without funding.
Right.
Okay. People go, well, but that's, so that's how it drains money. Mm-hmm. People are always like, it's publicly funded. It's got to be an even wash. No, it's not. And if you are paying taxes to a local school, which you are, and if those taxes are not going to your local school, you might want to know that.
Right. That's okay. True.
Okay.
Might want to be aware.
Now, for-profit, a lot of people don't even realize this, that there are actually for-profit charter schools that are publicly funded. How do you do that? Well, you create what's called an education management association, put it under a nonprofit status, and then funnel the money from the tuition that you get from the state taxpayers of that area, mm-hmm. and then you funnel that into another fund, making it for-profit. Almost sounds like something out of a lawyer type of thing,
yes,
right?
Yes, it does.
All right. No transparency, no accountability. We know all that. They're not allowed to do that. They close. What do you do with the students? That's a serious question, because when your school closes, guess what?
They all go back to public schools.
They go back to public schools without the money. Mm-hmm. And what about that money? Well, need we say any more than number 5? $216 million in fraud so far. And as Kevin Meaney would say, that's not right.
Time for Tim to rant. This is Someone Has to Say It.
I'm sorry, but all charter schools are not public schools, even if the Wisconsin State Journal says they are. Independent charter schools do not answer to locally elected school boards. That makes them not public schools. Also, these same, quote, charter schools create funding dilemmas for neighborhood schools by authorizing a backpack full of cash funding stream out of local neighborhood public schools. So what the hell is a charter school? Well, according to the Network for Public Education, and I quote, by definition, a charter school is not a public school. Charter schools are formed when a private organization contracts with a government authorizer to open and run a school. Charters are managed by private boards, often with no connection to the community they serve. The boards of many leading charters are populated by billionaires who often live far away from the schools they govern, end quote. So what is the Wisconsin State Journal's motivation for misleading the readers on this issue? It's suspect. Why the calculated misdirect? Why take the heat off of a valid issue that needs clarity? Why make it biased propaganda? Well, how about asking teachers in real schools? They know the difference. They'll tell you that when a child leaves their school, the money goes with them, and the lack of resources they already have get even lackier? No, but less. We might be surprised to hear the truth about public education from those that work in our neighborhood schools on a daily basis. You know, experts. And then, after we talk to teachers, maybe, just maybe, we might stop relying on, quote, edu-journalists that are either acting on explicit bias or just not simply informed on the issues at the heart of public education. No, charter schools are not public schools.
This is Busted Pencils from Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, teaching all children.
We are Busted Pencils!
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
She is the executive director of the Network for Public Education. She's been on the show before. Welcome back to Busted Pencils, Carol Burris. How are you, Carol?
I'm great. How are you doing, Tim?
Oh, well, I'm in Wisconsin. And, you know, sometimes being in the state of Wisconsin, Walker World can drag you down. However, I'm a little bit more disappointed in the press lately around here because we seem to have some confusion in Wisconsin about the definition of public schools, charter schools, and private schools. And in fact, there was an editorial that came out in the Wisconsin State Journal that pretty much said, hey, if it's a charter school and receives public money, it's a public school. I go to the Network for Public Education's website, and not so fast, says the network. So where are we, Carol?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. For quite a while now, proponents of charter schools have said that they are public schools, and then they refer to public schools as traditional public schools. From the investigation I've done, it looks like the term began with conservative think tanks like ALEC, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was very clever, but, you know, calling me Miss America doesn't make me Miss America, and it doesn't make me beautiful, you know. The truth of the matter, if you look, for example, at England, in England, a public school is a private school, right? So I looked up in a couple of dictionaries in anticipation of this call, Merriam-Webster and some other prestigious dictionaries, and said, well, what is the definition in America of a public school? And that definition has two components. The first component is public funding.
Okay.
But there's a second component, and that's public governance. And that is what charter schools, even those charter schools that are inside districts, do not have.
Hmm.
By their very nature of having a charter, they have a private board. And in the state of Wisconsin, which frankly we gave the lowest rating of all of the states, worse than Florida and Arizona when it comes to charter schools and charter school policy.
Okay, wait. So the Network for Public Education issued a report on all the states and their charter school policies, and my wonderful state of Wisconsin received an F?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, not only an F. we did numerical ratings, and overall the state got an F for both charter schools and vouchers, but when it came to the category of charter schools, not only was it an F, but it received the lowest grade of any of the states plus Washington, D.C.
Well, it's good to be best at something.
Well, you know, they're not best at being very public when
right.
it comes to their charter school. So let me tell you just some of the things we found. We found that in Wisconsin that the state fails to meet the state teacher certification requirements when it comes to charter schools. So in public schools, teachers have to be certified, in charter schools, not so. Wisconsin allows its charter schools to create their own disciplinary regulations. They don't have to follow the state's disciplinary regulations. And that often results in higher suspension rates and less of a process of appeals for youngsters who do find themselves suspended or disciplined. All of the charter schools in this state are fiscally and legally autonomous charter boards. So there is not a public governance component at all, even if they happen to be attached to a district. One of the features, too, that's so important, Tim, about public schools is the idea of transparency, right? You can go to your school board meeting and you can find out how much everybody makes and who the vendors are, and there are policies that say the vendors cannot be in any way connected with school board members, but that's not the case in Wisconsin with their charter schools. There is no conflict of interest requirement between charter board members and the educational service providers. So you could be on the board of a charter school, and you could be buying books from yourself or buildings from yourself.
Well, and see, I thought I was pretty clear about this myself. I mean, kind of in one way, it's, you know, locally elected school board oversight. Scratch that, and however you get your funding doesn't bother me. But that takes you out of the, quote, public school realm. And so you've kind of said that in lots of different ways. But, you know, here, for some reason, though, as I said, the Wisconsin State Journal declares that every, quote, and this is from them, every charter school in Wisconsin is a public school. And if people are saying different, they're getting it wrong. And I was just like, wait a minute, it's not controversial, at least up until this point, that charter schools that are run outside of districts, okay, and you're even talking within district, there's even a problem, but outside of districts, they're not public in the sense that they don't have a publicly elected school board. The money, they operate in direct competition to locally governed public schools. And in fact, as a kid leaves the local school and goes to the independent charter school, the money follows them. And so not a whole lot different from vouchers. So it defunds the local public schools, creates all of this. And I'm just, you know, it's interesting why the journal would come out so heavy-handed to say, no, you're getting this wrong. They're all public schools.
Well, I can't even begin to understand that, because your state is one of only five states that allow for-profit charter schools. Now, I don't know of any other government agency that we have that's allowed to make a profit and have stockholders and things like that. And one of the other, I think, very troubling features about charters in Wisconsin is that everybody knows that sometimes charters go belly up, right?
Mm-hmm.
They choose to close down, or they run out of money, or there's massive corruption. Wisconsin is one of those states that does not say that the property that the charter school has, when it falls apart, goes back to the taxpayers. So you could run, and this happens in Arizona as well, you could have a charter school that you run into the ground, along the way, you purchased a very expensive building on a good piece of real estate. Well, guess what? At the end of the day, you pay off your debts, and that building's yours. You don't have to take that building, as you do in some states, and say, well, okay, now this becomes the property of the district, or this somehow goes back to the taxpayers. There's a charter renewal period that is over 5 years, which is also highly unusual. So that whole idea that they are more accountable than public schools is not true. And nor does Wisconsin require annual audits of their charter schools. And that is extraordinarily rare. Most states make the charter schools get an independent audit.
So if I'm...
They're as private could be.
How did you know that's where I was going to go? Because I was going to talk about saying, so if I make a statement saying that, you know, these out-of-district, particularly charter schools, for which the state of Wisconsin has received the largest grant from Betsy DeVos, you know, to expand charter schools, that this is a continued pathway towards privatization. Somebody looks at me and says, no, you're wrong, Tim. And I'm sitting there going, no, I'm pretty sure that this is not a supportive public school move and that privatization is on the horizon.
Well, you know, there's two possible explanations that I find is, you know, one is that the person making the claim really doesn't understand a lot of the detail and nuance in the law. They probably aren't aware of some of the facts, for example, that I just presented to you. Or the other is that, in fact, their motive is what they want to do is to privatize public education, right? So that we wind up with a definition of public schools that's similar to the definition in England, which also has public schools, but their public, what they call a public school is in fact a private school. And it's really very, very concerning, and I understand your frustration. So I never will use the term traditional public school. Using that adjective is a deliberate attempt to make our community public schools seem to be dreary and not innovative. And, you know, the word traditional really doesn't have much of a positive connotation to it, at least within the context of schools. So I refer to them as charter schools and public schools, or publicly governed public schools, you know.
Right.
But I would never cede ground and call a charter school a public school. They can say it forever and ever, but it just simply isn't true.
Right. Like, as you know, I can say I have a lot of hair on top of my head, but when you go to the image of me, you will see that's not true. Even though I want it to be true, it's just not true. There's hair on the side of my head, but, you know, the top, not so much. And for me, though, what you just talked about is that the nuance here is very important for the public to understand. And in fact, when I look at this article coming out of the Wisconsin State Journal, it actually takes and says, look, there is no nuance. You don't need to understand anything other than if it's charter, it's public, now move on. And that to me sounds like, look, we don't want you to look deeper into this. Because as you pointed out, it's not even like it's a slight hair-splitting nuance. We're talking about the difference, a major difference in governance just alone from an elected school board to, quote, a private authorizing type of board who answers to whoever. You know, people will criticize me and say, well, Tim, you know, even those boards are accountable. It's like, well, accountable to who?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, according to...
They really...
Yeah. According to ESSA and according to the grants, they're accountable. And it's like, well, you know, if you've done the other homework, which, you know, following the Network for Public Education, another charter school scandal that you guys have been putting out, all of these places that have, quote, been scandalized had some type of accountability clause put into the language in which they existed.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem also, because not only are there laws and regulations that hopefully prevent fraud, but then you also have to have the proper system of oversight. And if you don't have that, and that's a problem in New York, where there are a lot stricter regulations, but very often they're ignored and nobody is really keeping track. What I would suggest that you do, Tim, and your listeners do, is create a box, and on one column put public schools, and the other column is charter schools, and then, you know, check it off.
Right.
Is an annual audit required? Okay. Can you elect the governing board? Right? Is there transparency? And just kind of tick down all of the different features of what we associate with public institutions, and I think you're going to find more in your state than any other state that Wisconsin falls short. And then if you can do a good GoFundMe, place that box as an ad right in that journal.
Well, she is the executive director of the Network for Public Education. She's a frequent guest of Busted Pencils. Carol Burris, you know what? I usually say thanks for busting pencils, but on this one, thanks for busting charters.
My pleasure, Tim. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
This is Busted Pencils from Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, teaching all children.
He has trained hundreds of people to begin effectively communicating progressive values. He is the former chair and research director of Wisconsin's Forward Institute. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Scott Whitcomb. Scott, hello.
Hello, Tim. Thanks. Great to be on.
All right. So you've done, and the other thing, you've done some work with George Lakoff. People aren't familiar with George Lakoff. Lakoff is a linguist who kind of talks to us about saying, like, look, if you're going to try to make people listen to what you're going to say, you got to hit them with the things that they value. Is that an oversimplification?
It's not an oversimplification. I think it's a good way to get people to understand what the whole idea of cognitive framing is about.
Okay.
Because it is complex.
Right.
It's about how your brain works, how you process and understand the world around you, and then also how that motivates your actions and influences your actions and motivations in virtually everything you do in your life without you even consciously being aware of that.
A great example
of that is this idea that what Donald Trump is doing is physically changing people's brains and how they respond to the world around them. And it's very true. So it's basically saying that, look, your brain has a huge task that it evolved to do, and it's to run a very complex body in a very complex world.
Mm-hmm.
So we evolved for fitness and for survival in a way that our brain processes 98% of what we do unconsciously and then causes our bodies to act in a certain way. And that's not to say that reason and rational thought is not part of what we do, but it's a lot less than we think.
So in other words, I'm not as smart as I think I am.
It's not that you're not as smart as you... it's not that you're not as smart as you think you are, but it's you are not smart because of... You're not as smart as you are because of rational thought.
Right.
You are as smart as you are because of how you have adapted to the world around you and because of the information you have taken in, how you process it within a certain worldview that causes you to act on the values that you care about.
Okay, and so let's move it right into where we want to head, which is, you know, you're talking about messaging, marketing, and things like that. And one of the things I think we learn, especially, is that good marketing works, and it's not that it works because it's a catchy tune. It's something that resonates with, quote, somebody's values, as you said. It strikes some type of, you know, electronic or electric impulses between the brain and all the synapses in there, and messaging matters. And so then move that on to politics, and messaging really matters and in fact can get people to pay attention and or fall asleep.
Absolutely. And we know from especially more current research what motivates and inspires people. And what is really concerning to me, especially in the area of education, is watching public discourse and watching the debate on public education and seeing that what most progressives and Democrats do without even thinking about it is they yield the bigger, more important values platform to conservatives and Republicans all the time.
So give us an example.
Sure. I can give you a perfect example. So just very briefly, conservatives have this idea that is, again, it's largely unconscious. It's how they process and have adapted to the world around them that says that the purpose of education, the why of public education, is to gain discipline so you can get a job, which leads to success and prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all about individual responsibility, acting on your own self-interest.
Right.
For private sector success. It also says that the government, the public, is immoral.
Wow.
So the public and government are immoral because it impedes your private success through things like taxes and regulations, et cetera, right? So government, you know, Big Brother gets in the way of your personal success.
Okay.
So it spoils your potential for acting on your self-interest and being successful. What they believe is that if you fail, it's your own fault. So you can understand this through their economic policies and things like that.
Right.
So, right, if you fail, it's because you are undisciplined. You act immorally. So you deserve your poverty. You deserve your unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
You deserve your inability to buy the insurance you need.
Right.
Right? To take care of yourself.
And this resonates with a lot of people because I have to say that that narrative, in one way, like you just said it, you know, work hard, get a job. We've heard it from the time we hit kindergarten that that's probably one of the, you know, sometimes very explicit by teachers saying, look, if you don't work hard, you're not going to get a good job. And so that translates. But to realize that it's a conservative message. But let's talk about, though, yielding that and say, because if I dare want to challenge that, I'm already seen as crazy, but what you're saying, though, is that if I'm a progressive and want to hold a different point of view, or let's just say Democrat, let's not even go progressive,
sure.
Democrats really haven't challenged that point of view. In fact, some of them may even slightly support and or be very supportive of that view.
Well, I listened to the forum, the education forum that, you know, you guys held in Milwaukee, and I listened to all the candidates, and, you know, one of the things you hear constantly from Democratic candidates is this idea of, look, we're the party of hardworking people. We're the party of, of individual success, of entrepreneurs, job creation, et cetera, et cetera. And when you translate that to education, you are evoking conservative ideas.
Mm. So in other words, I'm in Wisconsin. If I'm a candidate for governor and I'm evoking conservative ideas, I'm actually pitching for Walker against my own self-interest.
You're pitching for Walker by reinforcing his ideas.
Okay.
And the problem with that is that even though you may disagree with Walker on the details, on the policy details and the facts, when you're talking about these larger overarching frames or moral worldviews, as they're commonly considered, it's those larger moral worldviews that inspire and motivate people to act in a certain way or to act on a certain set of beliefs. All the facts in the world can't counter a powerful conservative belief system, as we have seen repeatedly in Wisconsin in elections over the last decade.
Right. As I've pointed this out, going Walker light just continues to yield Walker.
Exactly.
And so, you know, the whole idea. And so when you come back to education, I think education, though, for me, it's sad to watch, quote, Democrats. And I'm lack to call some of them progressives because I really think they're just
more neoliberals and are okay with the hard work and teacher's fault, but we just want to give you more money to buy. Here's why I support public education, because I want to give you more money. Now, I'm going to keep in place all the policies that make public education crappy and make teachers leave and make kids struggle, but I'm just going to give you more money. And that's where my pitch, and I think this is why I wanted to have you on, is when I hear Democrats, I'm like, why are they not countering that story other than to say, we'll give you more money? Because I actually think that even when you say, I'll give you more money, that even works against us.
Well, it potentially does, because if you're talking about just giving someone more money, you are potentially just enabling them to continue acting in their own self-interest. So for example, in the progressive worldview, the progressive moral frame, the purpose of the why of education, the purpose of it is that we care about others. And it's not just that we care for our own kids. We care for other people's kids equally as we care for our own. So then we're talking about a completely different vision of education, where you teach all kids what's possible in life, right? It's not just to get a job. It's to say, here's the possibilities for you in your future that potentially within your individual family unit or community, if we just stuck within that small closed realm, you wouldn't know 90% of what's possible for you in life. And the purpose of public education is we care for you and want you to know what's possible in life. And we have a moral responsibility to invest in everyone's future prosperity. And we do that through the public, right? The only way to effectively do that when you're talking about that big picture caring for others is to act through the public good to make those things possible. You can't do it by yourself. Like one person within their family can't make those things possible. We have to do it together through the public good for everyone. And that's the story. That is the frame that in the very broad sense, Democrats do not talk about. They do not share a vision like that. They are playing ball in the conservatives' court by accepting the idea that education, the purpose of education is to get a job.
Well, so when we could spend a lot more time talking about this, and sadly we don't have that much more, but it really makes me think about the fact that if I'm truly a public education supporter, and if I'm running for office, that the message of more money and hard work is, you just said, I need to counter that with a message of a collective responsibility to not just my kid but everybody's child, and that will resonate with some type of value voter and maybe possibly even get me some votes.
Absolutely. And, one of your favorite issues is testing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you compare these frames in terms of testing, it gives you a very different view of testing and a very different message on testing.
Political strategist Scott Witkoff talking about values in education, testing, high stakes accountability, and that there is a value based argument that can be made for or against. And as I've regularly said, I think Democrats are horrible at pointing out the problems with testing. And you're saying, yes, Tim, not only are they horrible, they don't understand the neurochemistry that goes into making the right messaging.
Yeah, absolutely. And because of that, they miss what could be a very valuable strategy for testing in public education.
Okay.
And if people go to my website, which is www.frameforfuture.com, that's the number 4future.com.
Okay. We'll have that on the website when we post this show. So
sure. And if you go to the research page, you'll see the research that I've done, not only for Forward Institute, but now for the Association for Equity and Funding, which is ongoing. And the research that we've done through AEF is showing us basically what information we get from testing. And I'm sure I could ask you and you would have the right answer. What does testing show us?
Yeah, I've said, you know, and anybody, it is the best, not even predictor, it's the best telling us of what your, you know, education level, parents, the zip code you're from. That's the other short way of saying it. In other words, it is the best indicator of whether or not you come from poverty, whether you come from middle class, whether you come from upper class. It is an economic indicator.
Exactly. And what we've found with the research I've done at AEF has also shown that testing provides us information that funding disparities can, in terms of how the funding formula is working in Wisconsin, are having an effect on student outcome. We have found that habitual truancy has an effect on testing. And basically what it's showing us, testing is saying, look, it's not how a student is either going to succeed or fail in life. Mm-hmm. And it's not a measure of a school or teacher's failure or success. Testing is showing us where our greater responsibilities are for the kids who aren't doing well on those tests.
But see, that's massive, though, to try to communicate that to people, because you are going so counter to the idea that most people are ingrained that, look, testing tells us whether or not a kid learned what they were supposed to learn, and maybe even tell us whether or not they go to a good school, and is probably an indicator as to whether or not they have a good teacher or not. And that's what people believe deep in their hearts. And here you are, and I've been saying this, and so it's not any different, but, you know, we're saying that, look, these tests, while some people may say they're meaningless, if we do look for the meanings that they tell us might not be the ones that we really want to talk about, which is, like you just said, the well-being of the child. How well are we as a society taking care of children?
Exactly.
Okay.
And so here is the headline for Democrats. When you talk about testing in terms of accountability, you are talking about the conservative frame of discipline. Because as you just said, the accepted public discourse on testing is largely conservative, because testing is a disciplinary tool to be used to hold teachers and schools what?
Accountable, man. There you go.
And that's discipline. Mm. So if Democrats want to change public discourse on testing and start winning the messaging wars on education, is we need to start talking about community responsibility and our responsibilities to care for other children in our democracy. Because then you look at testing in the frame of, okay, this school in Wauwatosa is not doing well on the NAEP or the Wisconsin standardized testing or whatever outcome benchmark you are looking at. So that test is telling us that we have a greater responsibility to the children in those schools.
Mm-hmm. And we don't do, I mean, see, right there then, too, and I'm glad you're on here, is because now I have a policy platform that I can advocate, which actually then talks about the responsibility of a politician to not use test scores as a way to beat up schools, kids, parents, and neighborhoods, but as a way to use test scores to hopefully leverage the fact that we need social policy to address the issues that are causing the test score discrepancies, or are the reason why, when we quote, people say we have an achievement gap. No, we actually are measuring the distance between those who have and those who don't have, which is a policy implication if you're a politician.
Exactly. And the best part about this, when you get into the values ideas and the framing of those policies, is that then it provides you a platform to give people a positive vision for the future, mm-hmm. for them and their children to have a better life based on progressive ideas.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, truly progressive ideas
is
based on caring for other people, right?
Is that the problem, though? I mean, is this where we really split, though, and go, are Democrats really progressives?
Well, of course, because because you can be a you can call yourself a Democrat,
right?
And you can act in your own self-interest, you know, in an authoritarian frame, wrong kind, right? You can be that type of a Democrat, and you're not acting on progressive values. You're acting on conservative values,
mm-hmm.
which is based on, again, discipline, self-interest, authoritarian, basically authoritarian structure in a socioeconomic hierarchy,
right.
is how the conservative values are built. Well, there are a lot of Democrats that act on conservative values. Just like people are going to find this hard to believe, but there are Republicans who act on progressive values of empathy, even within their own family group or within their own in-group structures.
Mm-hmm.
They will act with empathy towards other people. So we're not talking about partisan identification. We're talking about moral systems that motivate people's behavior. So
if I'm taking on Scott Walker in Wisconsin and I'm a Democrat, and when it comes to, let's put it back in the frame of education policy, I can either challenge him with the same conservative values that he's putting forward, which then now doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense after you've just explained it that way, because I'm actually challenging somebody with their same ideas, which doesn't seem to mount much of a challenge, or I can choose to go into the progressive side and bring out a whole new set of values on which to talk about and think about education and education policy, and therefore very much differentiate myself from the competition and even possibly, as we said, get those neurotransmitters of some other people to start firing, going, wait a minute, I want to hear what this person has to say.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And unfortunately, what most Democrats have opted to do is they have opted to try to negate Scott Walker using facts to say he doesn't do this, but they say he doesn't hold people accountable, he's not creating jobs, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all conservative ideas. So you're saying he's not doing conservative ideas when he is basically a conservative icon.
Right.
When the thing to do would be to present a positive vision for the future based on your values of caring for others, teaching kids what's possible in life, being responsible to everyone's future prosperity and acting on that. And then how do you do that? Right? That's a very different campaign than what the majority of Democrats are running right now. And here's the problem with that, is that the best research, most contemporary, is telling us that what motivates and inspires people is a positive, hopeful vision for the future.
Well,
not a negative fear of loss. Negative fear of loss idea message actually causes people to check out, causes them to hunker in place, causes them to freeze up, not get engaged, disengage.
Well, I hope more and more Democrats, and hey, even some Republicans out there, if you're listening, you know, pay attention. It's Scott Witkoff. Scott, what's that website again?
It's www.frame4future.com.
Progressive values, Democrats. You heard it here first. Scott, what we want to say is thanks for busting pencils.
Anytime, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Time for our weekly salute to legendary historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
They have the guns. We have the poets. Therefore, we will win.
My thanks to Carol Burris, Scott Witkoff, and you. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Thanks for busting pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.